This week on Vaticano, join us as we delve into the ongoing Jubilee events during the Sede Vacante, where the spirit of celebration continues despite the challenges. We'll also explore how faith and entrepreneurship intersect, highlighting the shared values that drive both realms. Plus, don't miss our visit to the Church of Trinità dei Monti, where we'll venerate the relics of St. Thérèse of Lisieux. Vaticano starts now. Following the passing of Pope Francis, the Catholic Church entered Sede Vacante, a time without a pope. Yet amidst this unprecedented pause, pilgrims continued to arrive from every corner of the globe to celebrate Jubilee Year events. In the days following Pope Francis's funeral, thousands of teenagers gathered in Rome for their Jubilee, a celebration that coincided with the Mass of Pope Francis's burial. Their prayers were tinged with grief, but also filled with hope and joy.
I'm feeling happy, but I'm also feeling sad because the Pope, he was very simple. Even now, he chose a simple coffin. He didn't choose to, you know, have a really big coffin. And he also wanted to be buried in a small church.
What role do you think you play in the church as a teenager?
I feel like it's important, like, in a way, we're the next generation of the church. I would like to be a priest when I'm older, so like forming and learning about the church and figuring out ways I can help and participate in like mass and events.
What will you remember about Pope Francis the most? What was your favorite thing about him?
I liked how he loved mercy. I think that was my favorite part about him.
Catholic people can actually have fun. I'm a Catholic people, but I like to party, go to this. Yes. But they're always there for you, and they know when to say when something is wrong.
Just days after the Pope's funeral, Rome welcomed another large group, over 10,000 pilgrims, for the Jubilee of People with Disabilities. Despite the church's leadership in transition, the Vatican made sure every one of them was welcomed.
I come to Rome for this Jubilee because I wanted to understand more about the people from here, to discover myself and to develop my sorry. Yeah, my limits.
Questa è la mia prima esperienza. Io fino adesso.
This is my first experience. Until now, I've never participated in a Jubilee. I came here first of all out of curiosity and to try a new experience that will certainly be enriching for me.
Un'esperienza che sicuramente sarà arricchente per me.
The following Jubilees of workers and entrepreneurs also took place without the presence of the Pope during the time of transition. Then on May the 8th, white smoke rose from the Sistine Chapel, and the new Pope, Leo XIV, appeared on St. Peter's Loggia. His first Regina Celi prayer coincided with the Jubilee of bands and popular entertainment. Music filled Rome's squares as bands from across the world played both for celebration and tribute.
Benedicat vos omnipotens Deus, Pater, et Filius, et Spiritus Sanctus. Amen.
However, only the next Jubilee, the Jubilee of the Eastern Churches, had an audience with the newly elected Pope. He welcomed them with open arms, affirming the importance of their traditions and the unity of the Church in diversity.
Siete preziosi.
You are precious.
Guardando a voi,
looking at you, I think of the diversity of your origins, your glorious history, and the bitter sufferings that many of your communities have endured or continue to endure.
about 5,000 pilgrims representing all 23 Eastern Catholic churches gathered to celebrate their rich liturgical and cultural traditions. Over 3 days, the Basilicas of St. Peter and St. Mary Major hosted a series of divine liturgy. The Jubilee of the Confraternities coincided with the inaugural Mass of Pope Leo XIV. This solemn celebration in St. Peter's Square marked the conclusion of the Church's period of transition, bringing the time of sede vacante, the interregnum, to a close and opening a new chapter of hope and leadership for the Catholic community worldwide. Shimmering with colors again for the Jubilee of Hope, hosting over 100 confraternities from around the world, gathered in a great procession through the streets of the Eternal City. Their history goes back to the early Middle Ages, but their meaning has grown since the first Jubilee year of 1300 was introduced. The Roman confraternities, from the Latin cum fratres, meaning with brothers, would assist the pilgrims coming to Rome for the Holy Year, most of them in a miserable state and in need of everything after months of crossing Europe to arrive at St. Peter's tomb. One of the oldest brotherhoods still active over the city of Rome is the Arch-Confraternity of the Gonfalone, established in 1264.
Portavano questo sacco bianco, un cingolo.
They wore a white sack and a penitential belt with knots, a crown, and an emblem. It was the emblem, the symbol of the brotherhood, a red and blue and white cross. It was a great brotherhood, and little by little, the brotherhood drew and many faithful.
Pian piano la confraternita coinvolse molti, molti fedeli.
Currently, there are more than 50 confraternities throughout Italy that refer to the confraternity of Gonfalone. Obviously, nowadays the challenges are different, adapted to current times, like the initiative of the Gonfalone School, Scuola del Gonfalone.
It is an activity that we have implemented to try to give support to those people, mainly immigrants, who are having difficulty in their process of integration.
In the past centuries, the major charity works for pilgrims developed from the Holy Year of 1550, thanks to St. Philip Neri. He decided 2 years earlier to found a confraternity not only for Eucharistic adoration, but to address the needs of pilgrims who were flocking to Rome.
Philip Neri saw that there were all these pilgrims around Rome, and you can imagine the manners a pilgrimage will be conducted back then on foot. Airbnb or anything, so they would sleep in the streets with nothing to eat nor repair. So he decided to help them. And so they started hosting them in their own houses, and then they started to rent places.
After the Holy Year ended, the association cared for the convalescent poor, discharged from city hospitals. In 1562, Pope Pius IV elevated it to the rank of Arch-Confraternity, with the name it still bears today, Venerable Arch-Confraternity of the Most Holy Trinity of the Pilgrims and Convalescents. Philip Neri wanted the brothers to wear the red habit, fitted with a hood to hide their faces in public, and keep charity anonymous and known only to God.
In our parish, but also in the Vatican, in other parishes throughout the city, we're wearing our habits. Ours are red, some are blue, some are black, some are gold. So ours are very distinct because they're red. And it's the old habit that was had also in the 16th century once we were founded. And we used to take care of pilgrims.
Jacob Stein has belonged to this Arch-Confraternity since 2022. And even though the Brotherhood doesn't have the means and possessions it once had, since they were seized by the new Italian state in 1870, it is still growing.
the future of our civilization, of our life, always lays to a certain degree in tradition, because if you have roots, you can grow and you can look at the future. And these are our roots: liturgical life, Eucharistic adoration, the assistance to the splendor of the liturgy, which I think has a great part in attracting people to our confraternity. We today count over 120 members.
A sizable part of them come from abroad, many, like Jacob, from the United States.
And what inspired me the most about their life in the parish is really the devotion that they have to St. Philip Neri and the devotion that they have of taking care now in a different way, but taking care of pilgrims, and especially we're living the Jubilee year right now, and so we're having even a greater vigor in taking care of pilgrims, which is very good for us and for the city of Rome itself.
There is one more brotherhood worth mentioning, the Archconfraternity of Camposanto Teutonico, situated inside the Vatican walls, where even popes have been members in recent times.
Yes, Pope Benedict XVI, Joseph Ratzinger, came here in 1982. He stayed in the room named Colon, just up there, right next to the library, by the way. He didn't just become a member of the college, but also joined the Brotherhood. That makes him, I'd say, the most prominent member of the Brotherhood that we have ever had. After all, he was the first pope among its ranks. And shortly after his election, Benedict XVI even returned here for another visit.
Don't go away. We'll explore how faith and entrepreneurship share values right here on Vaticano. Industriousness, diligence, prudence, courage. In his 1991 encyclical, Centesimus Annus, Pope St. John Paul II remembered the great importance of the social encyclical of Pope Leo XIII, Rerum Novarum. He also listed these virtues as essential for every business undertaking. Especially those taking risks to build their own businesses need the virtue of courage. But entrepreneurs are not just called to build for themselves, but to contribute to the common good.
We're here in Rome during the Jubilee for entrepreneurs. You brought a few entrepreneurs here to Rome as well. Does the church need more entrepreneurialism?
Yeah, so I'm with an organization called Scent, and that's our mission, really, is inspired by saints like Mother Teresa, Ignatius of Loyola, who helped to renew the church in their time. And they were holy, but they were also very entrepreneurial, and they found needs and they addressed them. And I think if we have leaders and people like that today who have this entrepreneurial spirit to address challenges in the world with God, that it could be transformative for things.
Mother Teresa is an entrepreneur?
I think of the heart of entrepreneurship as addressing needs in a creative way. So we often think of entrepreneurship as like some new way to make money, but it's really at the core of the identity of the entrepreneur as someone who wants to solve problems for a good, solve the problems of an individual. And these entrepreneurs of our faith, like Mother Teresa or Ignatius of Loyola, others, they often address the human and spiritual needs of people.
Scent Ventures is a U.S.-based ministry serving Catholic entrepreneurs. During the Jubilee of Entrepreneurs on May the 4th and 5th, they brought together business leaders from the U.S. and Europe to discuss evangelization and entrepreneurialism. Hosted at the EWTN Vatican Bureau, the focus was on how to reach people through new technologies effectively.
John, business and faith, how does that go together?
Well, I mean, they're not mutually exclusive. Business is an end, and the goal is just to make money or, grow something, and that's the end, then it's not according to God's design. But if it's a means, if we use business as a means for good, for engaging the kingdom, for creating opportunities and employment for people, it can be a good in and of itself. And you think even of St. Paul as a great missionary. He was founding communities all over the world that's mission and that's also entrepreneurship. So I think it's a helpful way of thinking about renewal and evangelization today.
Another businessman who came to Rome during the Jubilee is Stephen Auth. He had a stellar career on Wall Street until he suffered a heart failure. Today, he speaks openly about how this incident brought him to his knees.
And I resolved at that time, lying there on my back with tubes hanging out of my body, that if I did, you know, get out of this, I would, if I had another chance, I would do it differently. So from that moment, I became a missionary. And I do believe the Lord has given me my position, which is odd because it's a very powerful position on Wall Street. I oversee, own almost $100 billion and have a lot of people in New York and London and Boston. And I'm on all the business channels and all those things. And it's given me a chance to bring the light of Christ to a different place, you know, where sometimes it's kind of dark.
So you stayed in your position, but you became a missionary.
Yeah. Yeah, I've stayed in it because I think it's a platform for everything else. And, well, of course, I love my job. I love my people. And I think they kind of love me. What I found is that as I applied and learned more about my own faith, ironically, I thought it would make me, a kind of a disaster on Wall Street. But incrementally, it made me better.
The Jubilee of Entrepreneurs was overshadowed by the passing of Pope Francis and his funeral a few days earlier. The election of Pope Leo XIV brought new relevance to the topic of entrepreneurialism.
Proprio sentendomi chiamato.
He shared early on that he chose his name in honor of Pope Leo XIII. This pontiff wrote his encyclical, Rerum Novarum, in reaction to the Industrial Revolution. He struck a great balance between encouraging entrepreneurial spirit and social justice. The current Pope Leo XIV is facing a similar upheaval of society, the digital revolution. This was one of the most pressing topics at this year's conference of the Pontifical Foundation Centesimus Annus, whose members also met with Pope Leo.
On one side, there is this reluctance to accept the Pope called the technocratic paradigm. And so I think to use the artificial intelligence as a tool, to support natural human intelligence. And so I think new technologies in general are a topic of great interest to us.
Amongst your speakers were many cardinals, Secretary of State was here as well. What role can the church play today to address society also on topics like social justice, on the workforce?
Well, in several parts of the world, the credibility and the reputation of the church as a moral leader and as a leader in general is growing. And I think this is encouraging. This may be due to the fact that other kinds of leaderships probably are not as prominent and as credible and as visible.
Business and faith can inspire each other. One thing the Jubilee of Entrepreneurs certainly brought to light. Stay tuned as we visit the relics of St. Thérèse of Lisieux at the iconic church of Trinità dei Monti. A hundred years after her canonization, the legacy of St. Thérèse of Lisieux lives on. In 2025, she's remembered not only as a saint, but as a spiritual guide whose little way continues to inspire. The late Pope Francis shared a deep spiritual bond with the Carmelite saint, St. Thérèse of Lisieux. He welcomed her relics on multiple occasions, one of which during a general audience in June of 2023.
Sono qui davanti a noi.
Here before us are the relics of Saint Therese of the Child Jesus, the universal patroness of missions. Today, let us be inspired by the witness of Little Therese.
1 year later, the relics of the saint came once more to Rome, but as part of a broader initiative tied to the Jubilee year.
Saluto cordialmente I pellegrini di lingua francese.
I cordially greet the French-speaking pilgrims, especially the students of the various schools in Paris and Dijon, as well as the faithful accompanying the relics of Saint Therese of the Child Jesus.
The plan of the Vatican was to have a church dedicated to Saint Therese of Lisieux. And since she's a French saint and that here is a French church, the Vatican asked us if it could be possible that we can welcome the relics for the Jubilee year.
The Church of Trinità dei Monti, perched above the iconic Spanish steps, is one of Rome's most visited landmarks, drawing thousands of tourists daily with its iconic view. Yet beyond its scenic and cultural appeal, many visitors are surprised to discover the relics of Saint Therese of Lisieux inside. This unexpected encounter often transforms a touristic stop into a moment of spiritual reflection and prayer.
Most of the people who enter the church did not come for the relics. Some come because they're on a pilgrimage. But what is very, very beautiful is they get touched by the simplicity of Saint Therese. She was a poor person, but she had trust in God, and God who could make out of it great things. So whenever people come in and we explain it to them, they are very touched by it, and we give the opportunity to people to write their intentions of prayer on the paper and to put them in front of the reliques. And every day we collect hundreds of these papers. So it's quite amazing how people do not come for the reliques, but at the end, they come and they pray a while with the reliques.
More than a tourist destination, Trinità dei Monti is woven into the spiritual story of Saint Therese of Lisieux. It was here, as a young girl visiting Rome, that she felt a stirring of the vocation that would define her life and legacy.
It's not the first time that Saint Therese is coming at the Trinità dei Monti. She came here physically when she did her pilgrimage in Rome, because when she was 15 years old, she went with her father here in Rome to ask the Pope the possibility to enter in the convent with 15 years old. And she came frequently at the chapel Mater Admirabilis. And I think Saint Therese, when she came, she was 15 years old, seeing this picture of the Virgin Mary, which is painted as a teenager, was probably a great help for her to pray.
The church will play a special role in the Jubilee of Families, taking place from May the 30th to June the 2nd, 2025. As part of the official pilgrimage route, the church will highlight the saint's enduring message of trust, simplicity, and love within family life.